morning. Good morning and happy Hanukkah. My name is Salima Malson. I use the pronouns she and her. And it is my distinct pleasure and privilege on this last Sunday of 2024 to welcome you to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, also affectionately known as WUF. This morning we've gathered to celebrate. Oops, am I not getting through? Okay, how's this? Better? Okay. I'm hearing myself really loud, so. So this morning we've gathered to celebrate in true WUF style what is known as the Festival of Lights. Stories, music. Hanukkah has as many ways to celebrate as it has ways to spell it. And we are all just so glad to have you all with us as we put forth our version of a Hanukkah celebration. We've begun with the sound of klezmer. You've already applauded them, so I don't have to ask for that. And we'll be hearing more from them throughout the service as it goes along. By the way, the service is a little different than what you see printed on your, if you got an order of service when you came in. What we're doing is a little different, mainly because those of you that know me know that I have a little tendency, a little funky relationship with time. And since we are wanting to stay within our hour, we had to make some changes. But I think it'll be okay, and I hope that you'll enjoy most minutes of the service. So whether you're here in the sanctuary or watching on a screen from somewhere else, know that you are truly, truly welcome here. Welcome to join our celebration today and anytime. No matter your roots or your heritage, no matter your spiritual practices or your lack thereof, Hanukkah is about renewing our dedication to life, regardless of where you've come from or where you're going. The color of your skin, whom you love, or how you identify your gender, if you do. For it is love that shines from the center of our Unitarian Universalist values. And when I think of that, I especially like to remember the words of the poet-writer Alice Walker, who said so eloquently, "Love is not concerned with whom you pray, or where you spent the night you ran away from home. Love is concerned that the beating of your heart should kill no one." And so, as Nora lights our chalice this morning, the universal symbol of our shared and scattered faith, let us settle in to our time together by singing hymn number 123. And it looks like, yeah, here you go, dear. Let us sing together, Spirit of Life.
Oh, Thank you, Paisley and Virginia, for leading the signing. Now, if you will, please share with me the responsive reading, A Prayer for the World, by Rabbi Harold Kushner. Your words will be in the bold print. Let the rain come and wash away the ancient grudges, the bitter hatreds held and nurtured over generations. Let the rain wash away the memory of the hurt, the neglect. Then let the sun come out and hit and fill the sky with rainbows. Let the warmth of the sun heal us wherever we are broken.
Let it burn away the fog so that we can see each other clearly.
So that we can see beyond labels, beyond accents, gender, or skin color.
Let the warmth and brightness of the sun melt our selfishness so that we may share the joys and feel the sorrows of our neighbors.
And let the light of the sun be so strong that we will see all peoples as our neighbors.
Let the earth, nourished by rain, bring forth flowers to surround us with beauty.
And let the mountains teach our hearts to reach toward the heavens.
Amen.
Amen.
That our service this morning is missing a sermon. And instead, we're going to offer three stories as food for thought to encourage our conversation about how and why we celebrate holidays the way we do. These words are excerpts from Kimberly Devis, a UU minister who reminds me of a lot of our own Reverend Tracy. Kimberly's Substack column is called Hold My Chalice, and she wrote this on December 18th. December, for religious professionals and the lay folk who participate in their choirs and pageants and extra services, is frenetic. So they don't really have time for your questions about whether the oil literally lasted 8 days when it should have lasted one, or whether the ancients literally thought the sun would disappear forever, or whether Jesus was literally the Son of God, born in a manger and found by three wise guys who followed a star. You know, we know you have doubts about these seemingly too good to be true stories, and so do we. Still, we tell the stories and put our faith in them and act out the events and celebrate them, because that's the power of stories like these. The too good to be trueness of them is the point. We tell these mythic narratives all the time, even about people living today, which is why when we find out that they are actually just humans and make human mistakes, it really crushes us. And we do this because our brains are wired for story. We tell stories because we are formed by stories. It's an endless loop.
It's how we learn. And what's more, the stories don't stay static. They change over time to meet the moment. But somewhere in those stories is a kernel of truth that began thousands of years ago, an affirmation of something absolutely crucial to know about being human. The story is true, even if the facts are blurry. The stories from our sacred text were passed down in the oral tradition, told to one another, yes, to remember things that happened, but also to make them more memorable. Characters became greater heroes or greater villains to emphasize meaning. Events get exaggerated, other stories get woven in, and they're told to various audiences who tell them and reshape them for other audiences. And somewhere along the line, someone thinks to write them down, which then sets off thousands of years of more retellings and a considerable amount of arguing and debating about what is fact and what is true, which is missing the point. When it comes to our sacred stories, we should not be asking, is it factual? We should be asking, is it helpful? Do these stories help us become better, more charitable, more compassionate people? Do these stories lead us to generosity and hope? When we get caught up in the details, we miss what actually matters about our telling of the longest night, or the oil in the lamp, and the baby getting born. What matters is there is always a glimmer of hope. There is always a light. And those things, hope and light, continue to exist because we exist together to be a light for one another. And that's the real truth. This morning, we are here to share each other's light and each other's truth, regardless of the facts. So let's get started by rising in body or spirit as we are able and singing, and I mean really singing, the first two verses of hymn number 221 in your gray hymnal, Light One Candle.
Thank you.
take a minute to turn and greet each other. About Hanukkah is written for children, and so I invite them, any in the sanctuary here who would like to come up front and hear the story as shared by Izzy Hart, our e-director.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Izzy. I'm the director of religious education here at WOOF. My pronouns are yes and. Wow, that really hit. I always tell you, it's not. Don't perform when you're up here. It's supposed to be connecting. Today's story is called Maccabee, the Story of Hanukkah by Tilda Balsley. And let me tell you, it is hard to find a Hanukkah story that is about what happened on Hanukkah and not about what we eat on Hanukkah. So here is the story of the Maccabees. At Hanukkah, we tell this story of ancient faithfulness and glory, of freedom lost and freedom won by Jews who knew what must be done. The Greeks had gods, yes, more than one, god of sea, god of sun, throw a party, god of for fun. King Antiochus ruled the land, bow down to them was his command. And that's not all, I order you to dress and eat and act Greek too. No way, said every faithful Jew. Sometimes it only takes a few who know what's right and do it too. But Antiochus had great power. When they refused, his mood turned sour. Jerusalem, he snarled and frowned, we'll desecrate their holy ground, put statues of our gods around, and stamp out traitors where they're found. Some Jews gave in, and some Jews fled. And one Jew, Mattathias, said, to your idols I won't pray. Your laws aren't mine, I won't obey. He drew his sword and got away. Sometimes it only takes a few who know what's right and do it too. But Mattathias said, I'm old. We need a leader strong and bold. I have five sons. Whom should I choose? And he conducted interviews. Jonathan is plenty smart. and Simon knows a martial art. The other two will do their part, but Judah, what a heart. He called to Judah at first light, "Our farmers, shepherds, you'll unite deep in the mountains out of sight. With patience, teach them how to fight, then lead attacks through dark of night." Said Judah, eager, brave, and bright, "Count on me to do what's right with all my heart and all my might. Sometimes it only takes a few who know what's right and do it too." So Judah led the scrappy band to fight for freedom through the land. Now all admired his strong command. He's like a hammer in our hand. So Maccabee was his new name. The Maccabees gained instant fame. This slide is blurry, but at the bottom it says Maccabee comes from the Aramaic word for hammer. The armies of the king were strong. They thought they'd win, but they were wrong. The Maccabees fought hard and long, and King Antiochus finally said, "Enough, enough, enough bloodshed." Then Judah's men saw just ahead Jerusalem with ruins spread. And though they'd won, they moaned and said, "All is lost. This place is dead." But did Judah wail and hang his head? No. He told them all instead, "Sometimes it only takes a few who know what's right and do it too." Our temple is a royal mess, but we have come to repossess. So do I have a volunteer to get the idols out of here? I see the courtyard's gone to weeds. Who'd like to plant some flower seeds? Someone called, "Look what I found, our broken altar on the ground." And Judah said, "Who's good with bricks? These are problems we can fix." Enthusiasm filled the air as people scurried everywhere. A new menorah, aren't we clever? Its holy light will burn forever. A search for oil was underway, but bad news spoiled their holiday. This jug will last for just one day. The people cried, "But it takes 8 to make more oil, and that's too late." "You're right," said Judah, "but we can't wait. Use what we have, that little bit." And they all agreed, and the oil was lit. The next day still it burned like new. The third, the fourth, the fifth day too. For 3 more days their wonder grew. Free to worship without fear, they said, "Remember every year a miracle has happened here." And like brave Judah, they all knew, sometimes it only takes a few who know what's right and do it too. If Judah were alive today, what would he do? What would he say? He'd smile at the familiar sight of the menorah burning bright and join in prayers that we recite. He'd thrill us with a tale or two about his brave and loyal crew. We'd beg for more when he was through. But Judah lived long, long ago. Of course he can't come see us, so some of these things he'll never know. Yet we'll remember this, it's true. Sometimes it only takes a few. So Hanukkah is an 8-day festival of lights that we celebrate. The Jewish people celebrate the Maccabees fighting the armies of the Syrian king. And the legend is that the oil would have only lasted a day, but it lasted for 8 days. And that is something mysterious and unexplained. And sometimes we call that a miracle. And we remember that and celebrate that. Now, if all the kids want to come up to the stage, we're going to hand out lights for you to carry as you walk out. And instead of our regular song, we're going to sing "This Little Light of Mine."
Shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
So, as this historic year draws to a close and
we lean into the 2025 that lies ahead, let us take a moment to remind ourselves of all that we have to be grateful for, starting with those precious children. Those children who are so dedicated to the spirit of life and love. Let's be grateful for the nature that we are surrounded by and the community that embraces us as we make our way through this season of cold and long. While your monetary offerings are an important part of what keeps WOOF happening, it is you and I, it is us together who make WOOF, WOOF. As one of our familiar hymns says, from you I receive, to you I give. Together we share, and from this we live. The hosts will please come forward. We will now gratefully accept whatever offerings you might put in the basket. This morning, and let us join together in speaking our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful
when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
And I'm going to read a story called How I Came to Love Hanukkah by Rachel Tingley. I didn't write it, but I relate to it in many ways. Hanukkah, in a way, was one of my first words. The Jewish Festival of Lights began at the start of December of 1991 for me, and my parents lovingly explained everything they were doing as they lit the candles. I was delighted. My mother remembers that she put the Hanukkah, the lamp often referred to as a menorah, that we use at Hanukkah time, up on the mantel so that my toddler hands would not catch fire. I pointed to it and said, Haka! And then associated all other lights with it for a while, particularly candles. This was an anecdote so beloved by my family that it is repeated every year, usually after we have lit the candles together for the first night. I didn't know it yet at 20 months old, but thus began my lifelong obsession with Hanukkah. It's a holiday that, as an adult, I have mixed feelings about. It celebrates light in the darkness, hope where there is none, and the triumph of the underdog. At the same time, though, it celebrates war, bloodshed, and the winning of fundamentalism over modernism. Things were a lot easier when I only associated Hakka with my family and candles. Nonetheless, my interest in the holiday remains. Hanukkah celebrates the winning of the Jewish people over the Greek Seleucid Empire in the 2nd century BCE, but it also celebrates the major underdog story of the Maccabean Revolt. The Maccabees were fundamentalist Jews who hated the Hellenistic influence of the Greek Empire on Jewish life. In the end, the Maccabees declared independence, but the battle to get there was long, hard, and had a deep effect on the way Judaism was practiced, both then and now. Originally, the Greeks hadn't had any problems with how the Jews practiced their religion, such as sacrificing in the Second Temple in Jerusalem and running their own Jewish affairs. Upper class and some city-dwelling Jews began to Hellenize, becoming more like the other vassal states of the empire. They began no longer following strict kosher rules, not circumcising their male children, and sometimes sacrificing to the Greek gods in Greek temples. The Maccabees, on the other hand, a majority of whom lived outside of Israeli cities and were fundamentalists where religion was concerned, continued to practice the way they believed Jews had for centuries. However, after a high priest of Jerusalem led a revolt, the Greeks seemed to have assumed it was all Judaism that was the problem and cracked down on open Jewish worship from that point out. The Maccabees, who had always hated the Greek rule, revolted not only against them, but also the Hellenized Jews and everything they stood for, a Judaism that made room for assimilation. The Maccabees ended up winning that revolt, and the story we've all heard about the origins of Hanukkah, the miracle of the 8 nights that the oil lasted, is their story. The way that they practiced Judaism won out over the Hellenized assimilated version. This means that the Judaism we practice now has been highly influenced over the years by this example of an intra-religious dialogue. What does it mean to be a Jew? How does a Jew practice? These are queries that are not only still being asked to this day, but are the central questions of the 21st century Judaism. I am a Reformed Jew, the daughter of a Jewish mother and a father who did not convert to Judaism until after I was born. I am exactly the kind of person by which the Maccabees would have been horrified to have living in their ranks. I do not keep kosher. I mix different cloth materials in my clothes. I care very deeply about Judaism, learning Torah and my people's history, but am an educated and literate woman who works outside the home. I'm firmly into my 30s without children, obviously not me. I don't think they would have any idea what to do with me. Personally, the sort of Judaism I participate in is closer to the Seleucid Greek than the Maccabean Judaism. Does this holiday celebrating the Maccabees' victory hold meaning for me? I believe it does, albeit perhaps not in the way the Maccabees intended. Hanukkah is a time to spend with other Jews in a season where much of North America seems entirely focused on Christmas, which has become very secularized despite its Christian roots. Hanukkah is not a major festival and did not even originally involve giving each other gifts. Outside of its context, as the Jewish holiday closest to the Christmas season, it has become larger in American Jewish life due to its ability to hold Jewish space in the holiday season. It's a time of year where I am completely happy to say, actually, I celebrate Hanukkah and spend the time with my loving family. Although I am an assimilated Jew, I nonetheless strongly identify as a Jew, even though there is a larger culture of a different religion. In that way, I am more like the Maccabees than not. I will continue to light Hakka candles with my family and celebrate their warmth and love every year, and I believe it will reinforce my Jewish identity in the years to come.
Thank you, Natalie. Food for thought. In our chalice lighting prayer this morning, we said, "Let the warmth and brightness of the sun melt our selfishness, so that we may share the joys and feel the sorrows of our neighbors." This is the time in our service when we normally put those words into practice by symbolically placing whatever sorrow or joy we may be feeling into a stone and letting the gentle water of community absorb it. This morning, rather than physically coming forward to participate in that ritual, I invite you, while remaining in your seat, to contemplate your joys and sorrows in silence, and to consider these words from Stuart Kestenbaum, titled Holding the Light. We will end our moments of silent reflection by then letting them go with Shalom Kavurim. At the end of the service, if you would like to, you are welcome to come up and place a stone in the water, as you may be accustomed to. Holding the light. Gather up whatever is glittering in the gutter, whatever has tumbled in the waves or fallen in flames out of the sky. For it is not only our hearts that are broken, but the heart of the world as well. Stitch it back together. Make a place where the day speaks to the night and the earth speaks to the sky. Whether we created God or God created us, it all comes down to this. In our imperfect world, we are meant to repair and stitch together what beauty there is. Stitch it with compassion and with wire. See how everything we have made gathers the light inside itself and overflows. A blessing.
Tom Mayfield, and I was asked to read a piece by Barbara Brodman called The Maccabees Were on the Wrong Side of History, So Why Do We Still Celebrate Hanukkah? Each year when Hanukkah rolls around, I feel a certain sense of unease, a battle between Jewish zealots and Jews who wanted to partake of the richness of the Greek world around them. I have a feeling I'm on the wrong side of this, Hanukkah-wise. You like wine? My friend John, who is proud Greek descent, asked me the other day as he chortled. You like theater? You like philosophy? You're with us. He's right. I feel more in tune with the bad guys of Hanukkah, the Hellenizers, than with the story's traditional heroes, the Maccabees. But if I'm on the wrong side, it's a crowded one. I think 90% of American Jewry would be with you, said Rabbi Max Weiss, my rabbi at Oak Park Temple, outside Chicago, who acknowledges his own Hanukkah issues. Hanukkah has always been a controversial holiday since rabbinic times, he said, so much so that the rabbis of the Talmud reframed the story to focus on the miracle of the lamp oil lasting 8 days. It's the only holiday that celebrates a military victory and the Maccabees results. How can I celebrate a holiday that commemorates the defeat of Jews who wanted to live in a cosmopolitan world? In short, Jews like me. The official story of Hanukkah, which many of us learned in Sunday school, tells of a rebellion of a group of Jews against a Syrian Greek king who forbade Jewish practice and defiled the Jerusalem temple by turning it into a Greek temple. The Maccabees defeated the far more powerful Antiochus IV. They recaptured the temple and dedicated it to God. Hanukkah celebrates that rededication. While that is the official story, the 1930s Greco-Roman historian Elias Bickerman noted that it was the Jewish high priest who brought Greek practices into the temple. Reading between the lines, he concluded that the battle was among the Jews. He said, "The Maccabean revolt, according to this interpretation, was not a revolt but a civil war between cosmopolitan Jews who wanted to assimilate to Greek culture and religious zealots who wanted to defend their original tradition." So in this retelling, which has been widely accepted, Hanukkah celebrates the victory of zealots over what are essentially Reformed Jews. And this Reformed Jew should light candles because? I put the question to several scholars. Could they work a Hanukkah miracle and get this liberal Jew to love Hanukkah? They presented this way of looking at it. The story of a battle among Jews over assimilation actually gives it meaning far beyond the report of which side won. Kenneth Seeskin, a professor of philosophy and Jewish civilization at Northwestern University, said, "In a way, you can say this is a foundation of an issue that will be with Jews for a long, long time. The balance between identity on the one hand and complete assimilation on the other." This question has always faced Judaism, according to Hal Lewis, president and professor of contemporary Jewish studies at the Spertus Institute for Jewish Learning and Leadership. Jews as far back as the biblical period were in contact with other cultures, he said. The evolution of Jewishness has always been about Judaizing certain external elements and making them our own. There's always been a tension. How much do we incorporate and what is a bridge too far? The founders of Reformed Judaism, he pointed out, faced accusations of abandoning Judaism, just like the Hellenizers. But all that is reason to celebrate Hanukkah, he said, not to abandon it. The tension between those trying to let more of the surrounding culture in versus those that would rather let less in, that's a robust debate, he said. I love the tension. I think we should celebrate it, revel in it, even light 8 crazy candles because of it. Still, what about my admiration for Greek culture, the very thing that Maccabees fought against? That only means I'm in excellent company. Judaism has a deep and strong bond with the Greek world, which was the culture of the ancient world. One of the most important early translations of the Hebrew Bible is the Septuagint, a translation into Greek. Philo of Alexandria, the Hellenistic Jewish philosopher, wrote in Greek. When the historian Josephus wrote the first account of the Jews' celebration of Hanukkah, he wrote it in Greek. The word Judaism itself is Greek. There are more than 3,000 loanwords from Greek in the Talmud, synagogue, Sanhedrin. Those are Greek words. You go up to the Bima. Bima is a Greek word. That most beloved of Jewish holidays, Passover, the custom of a special meal where you ask questions and you tell stories. That's based on a Greek banquet called the Symposium. Okay, but what about hypocrisy? Can an assimilated Jew really celebrate a holiday that can be seen as arguing against assimilation? It turns out that Hanukkah has done some pretty heavy assimilating itself, and that's not even mentioning the modern tradition of sending Hanukkah cards. Consider the story of one day's worth of oil miraculously lasting 8 days, which the rabbis of the Talmud, uncomfortable with celebrating a military victory, assigned to the Hanukkah. It's a story told 500 years after the Maccabees, and in a totally different country, Iraq. Hanukkah bears more than a passing resemblance to a Roman pagan holiday called the Saturnalia, a celebration of light held when the days stop getting shorter and light starts to return, Saturnalia, an eight-day holiday, a practice of giving gifts, Saturnalia. We don't give gifts because of Christmas. It's because the Romans gave gifts during their Saturnalia that we all give gifts. It's our common Hellenistic background. That's another reason to celebrate Hanukkah. As a celebration of both a Greco-Roman heritage and our Jewishness, it proudly proclaims us as part of both. Jonathan Sarna, professor of American Jewish history at Brandeis University and chief historian of the National Museum of American Jewish History, delivered the coup de grace. The solution for my discomfort with the history behind Hanukkah? Ignore it. The meaning of a holiday, he said, is determined by the people who celebrate that holiday. And Jews have not made the Maccabees vanquished Hellenist story the central focus of the holiday. They have chosen Jewish identity and freedom. For the early Zionists in America, the Maccabees became like George Washington, fighting for freedom, Sarna said. At a time when anti-Semitism is growing in America, Hanukkah is really a moment of Jewish pride. Oh, and one more thing, that bummer of a feeling that descends on many of us when the days are at their shortest. Hanukkah brings light into a dark time of year, as does Christmas, and marks the turning point when the days start to lengthen again, so we can look forward and hope. I'll be lighting candles this year with a new respect, not just for the holiday, but also for the way we keep studying, reinterpreting, and renewing Judaism.
Thank you, Tom. I think you left out one part of that. One part of that story that said, in the conversation, okay, now it's time to eat. I'll bring the latkes, and you bring the spanakopita. Keep that in mind. Tom, if you would get the microphone, we're going to invite any of you who would like to speak a little bit about what your celebration of the winter holidays might be like and why or how they came to be for you. So anyone who has been munching on this food for thought, now's the time. Raise your hand and we'll bring you the mic.
There's always a tension between, like, empty ritual and full ritual. And you might resist doing something just because that's the way we've always done it. And, you know, bristle at that. That's not a good reason. But you probably all have things in your life that you do it this way because you've always done it. And that fact itself feels good. And my Christmas ritual is on Christmas Eve we have clam chowder because my mom always made clam chowder on Christmas Eve. And the only reason she did it is because everybody was so busy doing Christmas Eve things that there was no time to sit down for a family meal, so this pot would just be sitting on the stove and anybody could get it whenever they wanted. So for her it was the opposite of a ritual. It was the failure of ritual. But for me, and probably my sisters, that was the ritual, is to not have a ritual. And we love it. We have clam chowder every Christmas Eve. Okay, I'm going to tell the story of this sweater. My family really was not very observant, or I don't even remember rituals. We did light the menorah. But my son and I, one of the rituals that my nuclear family now has is we always see a movie on Christmas Day. And I remember one holiday season where I went just with my son, and we both share a love of goofball comedies.
And we saw a movie called The Night Before that featured Seth Rogen on Christmas Eve going to High Mass with his Catholic fiancé's family, who were very staid and serious. And he was high on acid, and he was wearing a Hanukkah sweater. And there was a scene where he goes screaming, he freaks out, and he goes screaming down the aisle. And we just thought it was so funny. And I said to Jake afterwards, I have to have a Hanukkah sweater.
I'd like to chime in on this one. So a lot of people celebrate the solstice as this turning point, like the return to the light, and that's not for me. I love the solstice for it being the darkest day of the year. You're drawing in as winter comes. My birthday is the winter solstice, so I've always kind of liked it anyway, even though it's really close to Christmas. So with my kids, I started when they were both babies, but we do what we call the dark day, where we turn off all electronics, we light a fire in the fireplace. I have a wide collection of strange little oil lamps, and we play board games and do crafts and read books and celebrate that drawing in of the darkness rather than its turning point.
My family celebrates all of the holidays because we have Jewish family and we have Iranian family and we have just all of them. So Yalda, Solstice, Hanukkah, and Christmas. But I think that the one thing that we as a family have discovered this year is Solstice is the last bastion of holiday that hasn't quite been commercialized yet. And it made it very special this year for us to go to the pagan celebration and to collectively spend it with other people who were really trying to make this a thing of meaning that had no purchasing involved. And that had so much quiet, special meaning for us. And I'm really excited to build more full rituals around that.
I married my delightful wife in 1965. She was from Germany, and so we started the custom of having live candles on our tree and actually lighting them. And it made some of our guests very nervous. But we always had water nearby. But just to tell you, if a tree is truly fresh, it will not burn. It will smoke. So, and of course, if you have a smoke alarm, that's a problem. And I'm happy to report, I can't do candles anymore living at Mary's Woods, but my son is still carrying on that tradition. And we have a new wrinkle to it. When we light each candle, we recognize somebody that we want to pay homage to, either someone who has passed or someone still around. And then when we extinguish the candles, we talk about things that we'd like to just do away with. Pet peeves.
So my family has kind of been reinventing over the last few years our winter holidays, and we do a fairly traditional Christmas. But I just realized as I was thinking about it, we bookend the sort of our Christmas season with rituals of sacrifice. We do Christmas tree sacrifices. So at the beginning, on the solstice, we've actually saved the log, the trunk of our Christmas tree from the year before, and we use that as the Yule log for the solstice. And then after Christmas, as we for our New Year's celebration, we whack off all the branches, and then we use those to toss them into a fire, making wishes for the new year. And so all that's left is the trunk, which then gets stored for the next year. And that's our new thing. We invented ourselves. So
completely original.
Is there one last person who has something that they cannot not share?
Hmm?
We've got a couple online.
We're watching online. Yeah, there's also. Okay. There's some. Disclaimer here, we may go a few minutes over.
My family, my paternal grandparents, one was Italian, Catholic. My grandmother was Russian Orthodox, whose family had been forced to convert from Judaism. And then my maternal grandparents were Puerto Rican Catholic and Reformed, or non-Baptist. So you had all this mixture. And then my parents, one was devout Catholic and my mother was an atheist. So holidays were always interesting in which way to go. So I've been trying to, as time goes along, just celebrate the changing of the year. So thank you.
Thank you all. Thank us all. And as we end our time together in the sanctuary, I'm going to tell you what I learned from a very spunky rascal of a Jewish teacher that I had the pleasure of knowing for a number of years before she died. When I asked her about any holiday, any Jewish holiday, she would say, they're all the same. They're all the same. You know, they come for you, they try to kill you, they find out they can't, and then we eat. And that's how it is. And that's how it is. So, as we close today, we're going to pay attention to this wonderful video from Boston area Reformed Jewish Children's Choir. And they're going to take us downstairs where we are going to be treated to latkes and spanakopita. Ready? Yeah. You'll get the chorus of this too.
Ready?
I am a locker. I am a locker. And I am waiting.
Of our chalice and carry its warmth with us throughout the week. And as we let ourselves down to the coffee room and the latke kitchen, we will be accompanied by, you know what? Ready, set,